Hi and welcome to the CDC Insight podcast, where we share some of the highlights from one of our recent Insight events. The Insight series shares practical lessons on private sector investment and development based on our experiences, knowledge, and research. So in today's episode, we're focusing on the economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic on the African continent and discussing some of the trends that have emerged. Our guest for this one is Dr. Franny Liotier, Chief Executive of Southbridge Investments, one of Africa's most exciting investors. And Dr. Liotier was joined on the panel by Peter Mailer, a Coverage Director for Africa at CDC. And the conversation is chaired by Colin Buckley, General Counsel and Head of External Relations here at CDC. So now let me hand you over to Colin.
Welcome to CDC's Insight Program. My name is Colin Buckley, and I am your chair today. Today, we will again consider the impact of COVID-19 on Africa. And recent events there have only underlined the ongoing significance of the pandemic in Africa. However, it's important that we put COVID in an African context, one of economic success in the past, of demographic opportunity and risk, one of continuing challenge. The short-term effects of COVID ought not to overly distract us from the patient task of supporting private sector development and economic growth on the continent. And today, to help us consider those short and long-term horizons, we're joined by Dr. Franny Liotier. Dr. Liotier is a senior partner and chief executive officer at Southbridge Investment, where she leads the investment activities of the firm. Prior to joining Southbridge, Franny held senior leadership roles in a host of prestigious international organizations, including the World Bank Group, the African Development Bank, and the Trade and Development Bank. She's authored several books and articles and has lectured at Sciences Po, MIT, Harvard, and the University of Tokyo. Welcome, Franny, and thank you for joining us today. I wonder if we could start out with this notion of context. And you've been investing in Africa now for quite some time. And I wonder if you would begin by giving us your reflections on how the investment landscape in Africa has changed over the time of your investing.
Yes, thank you, Colin. It's a pleasure to be here and wonderful to see you once again. I'm a big follower of your podcasts. I think the landscape in Africa has changed dramatically over the years. If you look, and I'll only look at the last 20 years in order to give the context. If you look in the early 2000s until around 2010, the investments were coming mostly from development finance institutions, working with foreign direct investment, with large corporations coming to invest in the oil and gas business, in mining, and to a certain extent in the telecoms business. But then after 2010, you see a dramatic shift between 2010 to 2019, where the telecom sector, media and communications pretty much take over and dominate the investing scene. And you see other sectors coming in, for example, focus on consumer products in the retail space, and also introduction to a certain extent of the transport and automotive sector, where people are investing more in that space. But then just before we got into the pandemic, you were seeing this very dynamic combination between digital assets and clean technology or green assets. And those were taking a huge amount of investment. And they, in a way, sort of hid the other dynamics that were happening below the scene. For example, investments in the housing sector, investments that were going to agribusiness and particularly to the food and the nutrition value chains, and investments that were beginning to happen in the health sector, pharmaceuticals, and so on. After the pandemic, there's been a deepening of some of those trends, particularly with the digital and tech sector taking over even more dominant as a position of a share of investment coming into Africa. But also the beginnings of a very strong interest by pharmaceutical companies who are looking, not only the large pharmaceutical companies looking to invest in Africa, but also the smaller ones looking to see how they can produce intravenous liquids, the oxygen tanks and distribution of treatments that otherwise were imported from neighboring countries or from outside Africa, and a lot of investment going into manufacturing of medical equipment, whether it's ventilators or even the protective gear that is needed for the medical staff. So I think the trends that had begun got deepened by the pandemic, and some of the sectors shifted a little bit as investors focused on the portfolios that they already had to make sure that those companies got liquidity and also reshaped some of their investment decisions if they hadn't made those decisions already to focus on the emerging importance across countries. I think the second important thing that has changed is the sources of capital. I mentioned earlier on that the development finance institutions were playing a large role and have continued to do so, increasing their investments in Africa. And others, other sources were the markets, where a lot of countries, for example, went to issue bonds, whether they were social bonds or green bonds, or went to the Eurobond market, and that was used to invest heavily in infrastructure and other sectors. You had the appearance and growth of private investments, private debt and private equity. And then another trend that emerged as well is micro-investments by individuals, which was something that Africa had not seen, but in the last few months, 12 months or so, and particularly because of the pandemic, that trend has increased and it has been enabled by technology. So I think a very dynamic scene with lots of changes and a shift towards sectors that are either digital or clean tech, but with a lot of diversity underneath that.
So thank you for that. I mean, that's a really great picture of, I mean, we've got a story of dynamic growth, of deepening capital markets, of new sectors coming up. But I was wondering if you could sort of do a little crystal ball gazing for us. And as you look into the midterm, are there any themes that you see that may be coming out that would interest investors in Africa?
I think in the midterm, and particularly because Africa has handled the pandemic very well and has come out much less touched than one would have anticipated before, there are a couple of trends that I think are worth looking at for investors. The first one is all the demand that is going to come as a result of the continental free trade area. So you start with things like supply chain logistics, the need for warehousing, the need for industrial parks that are going to support all of the manufacturing that is being put in place, and the linking up of countries internally, which is not something that the continent had focused on before, because most of the linking was being for external markets in order to export. The second trend is the demand for energy. I think energy is a booming sector in Africa now because not only of this growth in industrialization and the demands, but also the urbanization of Africa. So there's demands in cities, demands in industry, and connecting up the rural areas. I was very surprised that the biggest, the winner in terms of the largest investment in 2021 Q1 has been the solar energy sector. So there are two trends moving at the same time with investment in this distributed renewable energy, but at the same time, investments in the trunk infrastructure that is going to be needed, the transmission networks, distribution networks, with these markets growing. For example, now you can sell energy from Mozambique to Ethiopia, and that energy trade is happening at the same time. So you see these dual themes. And I think this is, for me, what always surprises me on the investment side is the duality of African economies, from the very big to the small, the very dynamic and fast moving to the medium and slow moving, and then the very impactful in terms of transforming the way people function to those investments that bring in efficiency. Maybe one last trend that I think I would like to share, because it has been quite important, is the fact that Africa has to adapt not only to the effects of the pandemic in the rest of the world, but also to the challenges and opportunities that come with climate adaptation and change. And a lot of these investments are also being driven by what is happening in the technology space, the solution space, and the opportunities that are driven by climate and the need for adaptation, mitigation, and resilience.
You'd mentioned, let's pick up this theme of climate, and I'm curious about your thoughts about climate and infrastructure, because there is a, you know, there is a relationship between the two, shall we say. And I'm just curious about your thoughts on how climate may form infrastructure investment going forward.
Yeah, so I'll start with the energy space, because that's the one where there's a lot of debate right now, whether developing countries, and many of them are in Africa, should actually use natural resources like natural gas and oil in order to develop their industrial sector. And one of the things that has struck me looking as an investment is that if you invest in the types of natural gas transmission networks, that actually positions the countries very well to take up things like green hydrogen. So the oil and gas sector, which has been classified as one that is not good for the environment, could actually be one of the big drivers, especially because Africa has offshore oil and gas, and therefore could have an opportunity to develop green hydrogen from those sources using natural gas as a transition fuel to take it there. So I think you'll see more investments going. You already have with the big investment by Total in Mozambique, and you see other investments happening in other countries around Africa. Tanzania is another one that may be coming along the line to exploit natural gas, because that's a very good way for the continent to actually transition to a hydrogen or other solution. The second area, which is also related to climate, is the innovations that are happening in architecture, construction, and materials. Because of the high demand for social housing, the drive to bring costs of housing down so that you get affordability are driving also trends on the architectural and the material side, which are providing really exciting opportunities for social housing. So companies that are in the design and architectural field, so that's a service investment, or those that are constructing using modular and 3D printing, which is another form that has become quite dynamic in terms of innovations in materials, and those that are using local materials that have better properties, which will be very helpful as Africa gets hotter and hotter with climate change, being much better to absorb roofing materials and walls that can handle the heat waves that we are likely to have.
I think this is a great moment to introduce our second speaker today, who's Peter Myla, who is a coverage director for Africa at CDC Group. Peter's a member of CDC's Africa team, but he's resident here in London, and he supports CDC's equity, debt, and fund investment teams throughout Africa. He's worked in private equity, investment banking, telecommunications for 15 years. Welcome, Peter. I wonder if I could start off with a question to you, which is picking up on Franny's discussion about climate and infrastructure. And I'd be curious if you could tell us, I mean, what has CDC been doing in this kind of climate infrastructure space?
Thank you, Colin. And good to hear from Franny, especially about the on-ground innovative solutions in Africa. Infrastructure is the foundation of economic development. That's how we view it in CDC. Without reliable electricity, clean water supplies, efficient transport infrastructure, and widespread access to communications networks, productivity is stifled, and incomes remain very low. Electricity in Africa costs households 3 to 6 times the global coverage average. And 57% of households, or call it 600 million people in Africa, do not have electricity at all. I mean, let's take a pause here. That's close to the population in Europe without electricity. If the unconnected in Africa were to wait for connection through traditional grid, some might have to wait for lifetime. The question is, how could you connect the unconnected to electricity and leapfrog the traditional grid network. We at CDC, we are exploring investment in climate initiative technologies to promote economic growth and the well-being of previously underserved communities to reduce reliance on wood harvested locally and diesel generators, which are both expensive and environmentally unfriendly. CDC has provided capital to home solar system companies such as MCOPA in Kenya and Uganda, PEG Africa in Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, and Senegal. We have also invested in suppliers of off-grid for businesses, such as Metal Solar Africa, which has developed solar installations across South Africa, Kenya, Namibia, and the Seychelles. Colin, this is just the beginning. There is still more in terms of what could be done on infrastructure.
Thanks a lot, Peter. I wonder if we could also pick up some of the conversation we had around COVID. I'm curious, as a DFI, when CDC's investees were faced with the pandemic, I mean, what type of investments did CDC prioritize and is prioritizing?
You know, Colin, one of the most challenge, if I were to remember 2020, and it's that challenge is still facing us today, is how do you prioritize investment in an environment of lockdown, closed borders, and challenges of conducting on-ground due diligence? So within CDC, we came with three pillars. The first was to preserve, supporting our partners to safeguard impact and weather the crisis. Secondly, strengthen pillar to scale up response to the economic and health challenges of the crisis. Lastly, is rebuild, a long-term partner to the countries where we invest in. So how did we do that? What we noticed during the financial crisis was the following things. Large financial institutions pulled back from investing in Africa. And it's not only through 2020. I think even 2020 fast tracked this. This has been a slow trend since the global financial crisis. Higher capital costs and increased compliance requirements are making Africa much more expensive for international banks. That is having a big impact on the availability of risk capital. The vast majority of global banking firms acting in Africa have withdrawn or significantly reduced their operations. Local African banking institutions have not been able to fill the gap. Furthermore, at this time, even now, the uncertainty and economic instability, they are more likely to channel capital towards big businesses or government, rather to the small medium enterprises. They are the greatest losers. So at CDC, what have we done? I'll mention one of the transactions we have done last year. We provided $100 million risk-sharing facility with Societe Generale to boost African trade with a focus on Francophone West Africa. The facility will bolster trade finance in hard-to-reach and often overlooked markets such as Mali and Mauritania. This facility will provide critical funding to local importers of sugar and wheat, for example, supporting food security and helping companies through the current economic crisis. And that's what Franny was mentioning, the companies on the ground that are struggling.
COVID has cast a long shadow, not only here in Europe and London, but especially across Africa. And I want to finish up with a question to both of you, which hopefully is a more positive question. So I'm going to ask the question first to Peter, which is, looking forward, what is it that gives you hope for Africa and African growth?
Colin, my glass is neither half full nor half empty. My glass is overflowing with opportunities, given the large funding gaps left by the commercial capital we spoke about. You know, the untapped African coastline for offshore wind development, if you were to think about it, that there is little being done on offshore wind. And people are, each time I'm listening, they're talking about climate change, how do we resolve this? And I say, you can go to Africa, put an offshore wind at anywhere on the coast, and you could solve 1 megawatt. And then coming back from a CDC point of view, I mean, from our side, I go back to our three pillars, the post-COVID rebuild commitment to invest ahead of the curve. That said, at the start of this year, our CEO, Nick, made a commitment that CDC will invest over $1 billion in Africa in 2021. Another billion reasons to be optimistic about creating jobs and eradicating poverty in Africa.
Thanks a lot, Peter. And Franny, if I can ask you, your message of hope.
My message of hope is Africa is young, Africa is creative, Africa is growing, Africa is innovating, and Africa is getting results. And I think this is not just stories, it comes from facts. So I'm very optimistic because of track record. And as an investor, track record is very important. I'm optimistic because of the balance between opportunity and ways to mitigate risk. So whether you look at energy sector or financial sector, there are many opportunities, but you have to be very wise and learn from the local context in order to properly manage risk. And I also think that Africa is actually stretching its hand across to the rest of the world and looking not only to integrate within itself, but also to integrate with the rest of the world. And therefore, it's a great opportunity to invite people to come to Africa and to work with this very dynamic, youthful population to develop the continent and to connect it to the rest of the world.
Thank you for listening to this CDC Insight podcast. If you enjoyed this selection of highlights, you can find the full recording of this event on our YouTube channel. There's a link to find it in the show notes for this episode. And if you want to hear more about our Insight program, then please do sign up to our newsletter. Again, you can find a link to that in the episode notes. That's pretty much it then for today. Thanks again to our guest, Dr. Franny Liotier, and my colleagues, Peter Mailer and Colin Buckley. We'll be back with another podcast episode in a couple of weeks. See you then.